Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your show host, Randy Fine. Would you like to know how to shift out of fear, anxiety, worry, and overwhelm in an instant and anchor yourself in a new reality that leads to profound positive changes in your life? Well, today's special guest, Donna Blevins, had been a mind shift coach for many years, but found herself frustrated with a way to really demonstrate the power of her program in the midst of writing her breakthrough book. As she later reflected, be careful what you ask for, because she was struck by what she calls, quote unquote, a stroke of genius. That's when Donna went to work using her own mind shift exercises. 3 days later, Donna started talking fully and completely, and she's going to tell you all about that. But she got the proof she was asking for. Now Donna is bringing forth her book, Mind Shift on Demand, Quick Life-Changing Tools. It's Donna's proven, practical, and profound book on how to shift out of fear, anxiety, worry, and overwhelm. Donna Blevins has served as an executive coach, a poker coach, and an overall mind shift coach with a diverse background as a professional speaker, real estate consultant, magazine advertising executive, newspaper columnist, and, get this, a professional poker player with 2 master's degrees and a doctorate. So you must really want to meet her now, so we're going to get started. Good morning, Donna. Welcome.
Well, good morning, Randy. I'm thrilled to be with you here this morning.
And I'm thrilled to have you. So, you know, I alluded to your to what happened to you, but I want you to explain it. That's why I didn't explain it in the intro, because I want you to talk about the whole thing. So you wanted to prove your method, and you were frustrated. So what happened? You asked for what?
I was actually getting ready to send the draft of my book, Mind Shift on Demand, to editors. This was Halloween of 2013, and I stood up from the computer, and I'm looking at one of the mind shift exercises, and I said, yes, but I want something that proves my mind shift exercises work, and I want proof now. And I stomped my foot like a brat, and I reckon I kick-started the clot, and a few moments later, there was lightning that flashed in my head, and I had a massive center-left brain stroke. And as I hit the ground, I thought, crap, be careful what you ask for. And I was airlifted to the University of Florida Teaching Hospital, and all along the way, the healthcare teams are saying, she will never be able to speak again fluidly. It'll be 8 to 9 months before she can speak. And I choose to cancel that. It's like I have this internal remote control, and I'd go cancel, delete. Because when we buy into a disease, we magnify it. We give power to it. The more you think about pain, the more you hurt. And this left center brain is the part that controls your ability to speak. And I could only say two words. I could say my name haltingly. I said, Donna. And I said, crap. And it's interesting because I actually made them laugh all along the way, because every time they asked me something, I'd say, crap. So I kept the humor going in it. And I started using a mind shift exercise that my friends and family and coaching clients have told me is my signature mind shift exercise. And I started using that one because it was the one I could access the fastest. And it's quick, 7 simple steps. But once I become accustomed to it, I can think one word and literally shift through this. And I was able to shift away from owning this and being this disease, and that's when I was able to speak in 3 days fluidly.
And you blew away the entire hospital staff, because this was miraculous, right?
Yeah, it was, and I must admit, it was a proud place to be. I mean, the Halloween that year was on a Thursday, so it was Sunday morning 3 days later. And I had been working on this mind shifting. I had asked myself questions like, my words were missing. They were in my head, but they weren't coming out my mouth. And I thought, if I'm going to a foreign country, what list of words would I want to learn? And, you know, in my head, because I wasn't able to write it down, because we are cross-wired, and when you have a stroke on the left side, oftentimes the right side doesn't work either, and I'm a right-handed. I write with my right hand, but I didn't write with my right hand then, because I pick up a pen, and it was just like squiggles. So I couldn't make a list with my hand. I had to make a list in my head. And so I made a list of the words you'd want to say, and it was like, hello was the first one in a foreign language, and to me right now, English, my birth language, was a foreign language. And so I said, okay, and I got quiet, that's all I could do in my head. And I thought, where are my words? Rather than continually go, oh, I've got to find that word, I can't say that word. When we think that way, as we mature, as people get into the aged area, as they age, I've become older, and I'm in Florida, and that's a place where there's a lot of us who are baby boomers and who are dealing also with the aging effect. You try to find a word and you get angry at yourself and you can't find that word, because when you have that feeling about a word, you push it down further in your subconscious because the words are there. I was just trying to figure out how to help them come to surface up to my conscious mind so I could be able to speak them. And I actually thought, where are my words? And I saw this, in my mind's eye, I saw this room, a huge room, long room with 4-drawer filing cabinets on either side. It was kind of a narrow but a long room, just dozens of 4-drawer filing cabinets. And when I walked in the door, every drawer was open and all the files were in the middle of the floor in this huge pile of files taller than I am, and I'm 6'5", so it was a huge file. And I thought, oh, crap. Here, with the stroke, all the Word files are in the middle of the floor. I thought, well, I guess I better go find the words and put them back in the proper filing place. So I went through these files, and I said, I'm going to look for the word hello. So I came across a file that said hello. I opened it up, and it was like a child's book. It popped up, you know, like a paper pop-ups. And it was really fun because I was having a game in my head. And I thought, well, I wonder what this hello sounds like. And all of a sudden, there was a button that appeared on the folder, and I pressed it in my mind, and it was hello. And I thought, well, that's my voice. Okay, well, do I say it differently? Another button came up, and I pressed that, and it went, hello. And I thought, well, that's fun. Do I say it another way? Press another button. It was hello. Well, there's different ways to say hello. So I started toning it out. And that was actually how I was able to speak, because I started toning it. I would literally do, in my head, I would think, okay, it sounds like that, and I would start saying the, you know, attempting to say without trying to say, and I was drinking a massive amount of water, because when we heal, we need more hydration than we think we do, but when we heal, we need even more. So I was drinking a tremendous amount of fluid. Those containers that they bring you in the hospital, you know, you press a button and you ask for more water. So about every hour, I'd press the button, and they would come to the door, and since I was unable to speak to them, they'd kind of shrug and look at me, and, you know, like, they'd say, what? And so I'd hold up the pitcher or the water, and they'd go, they'd take it, and they would, like, roll their eyes, like, oh, she's doing it again. She's pouring it down the drain. I mean, how could she be possibly drinking all this? They never said that, but that was the eye roll. So that was the process. And when I shared this, my husband insisted that I go tell his shrink about this, because he said, I want to know what he thinks. And the shrink actually said, what you were actually doing, you were rewiring the neural pathways in your brain, because we do have neuroplasticity. Our brain can change, and we can create new pathways. And today, when they do an MRI, they did an MRI about six months ago, so this is 5.5 years after the stroke. At the time when they did an MRI, there was a black hole about the size of a golf ball on the left side of my brain, and they said, there's no way you can possibly speak, because that has completely wiped out the place that controls your ability to speak. So, interestingly enough, when they did an MRI just as a follow-up about 6 months ago, the black hole was still exactly there. And they actually looked at it and went, we don't know how in the world you could possibly be speaking as you are.
That's incredible. That is absolutely incredible. I mean, I've heard a lot about neuroplasticity, but, you know, to hear the way that you did it and how quickly you did it is just mind-blowing. So I think that's great. And I know, you know, while you were sitting there, they were talking about you and over you, thinking, you know, you didn't know what was going on, right?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. They made the assumption that I wasn't able to speak. I mean, I probably was offline, but I was completely aware. I could hear everything. And when, you know, you've heard of people that may have one of their senses are not working as well, you know, possibly even blind people have oftentimes said that they can hear the ability to hear is heightened. Even their ability to smell is heightened. So I think possibly my speaker system, you know, my earphones were probably, you know, cranked up on their own, because I could hear. I heard everything. People were standing 10 feet away, and I could hear them talking.
That's a good warning for the medical profession, not to talk around people who they don't think can, you know, who they think cannot hear them. So when you first said that word, hello, how did it come out clear? Did it clear as a bell? Or did you have to work on that?
Oh, it was working on it. It took me 3 days to work on those words, and I was literally up for about 36 hours. I was so energized that I just stayed awake, and I was, you know, working on mental training. I had no idea how to do it. It was just, you know, I was on my own lab rat, and I'm just so grateful and thankful that I had actually been working with mind shifting. I'd been working with, the key is the word you choose, set yourself up for either success or failure. And I chose at that time to shift away from thinking that my stroke had muted me and just find another way to speak.
Well, you sound great now.
Well, thank
you. It's hard
to
believe.
And
it's really hard to believe.
Sometimes I'll come across a word that feels odd, sounds odd coming out my mouth, and I, with my husband, and sometimes I will have a little bit of a stutter. And that's okay. I forgive myself for doing that rather than getting upset about doing it. I've even mislaid words, temporarily mislaid words. By the way, I have eliminated the word forget and forgot from my vocabulary. Cancel that. Those words are out because I temporarily mislay a word. I might stutter a bit or stammer, and that's okay. When I'm in front of an audience and I'm doing a presentation, a keynote, I might be doing a 3-hour seminar, and I will tell them when I start is that every now and then, sometimes a word is missing in action. Do I have your permission while I'm here that when I'm looking for a word and it is eluding me, would you please help me find that? May I be transparent and tell you that I am having, I've got a word missing. And they go, yes, we'll be happy to help you. And it's been very comforting to me because rather than feel like I'm broken or might have a problem with it, I look at it as a wonderful way to model the fact that when you have a word that's missing, just ask someone to help you find it.
That's so cute. What a great approach. It's really nice to connect with the audience that well, that way as a speaker. The first exercise in your book, Mind Shift on Demand, is the gear up exercise. Can you talk a little bit about that? How we do that, what it's about?
Yes, on the gear up, I actually originally just started talking about with my coaching clients, I'd say, just shift into neutral, you know, just, you know, and they'd go, I don't know how to do that. And so one day I thought, well, let's just visualize that we're shifting a manual transmission in a car. Now, granted, there's a lot of people who are listening. I know that there are a lot of people who are laughing, going, manual transmission, I can never do that. Do yourself a favor, find one, because it's a really good practice. Because, and if you go, I don't want to go sit in the manual transmission, just go ahead and, you know, go Google it and see how to do it. But in the mind shift exercise, what I wanted people to do, and I'd like for you to think about this right now, is just imagine that you're sitting in the seat of a car and you have a manual transmission and your left foot is going to push in on the clutch. And now just pick up your foot right now and push it down to on the left side, the left foot, as if you're pushing in the clutch. Now what I'd like for you to do right now is take your right foot and push down on the brake. Now think about that, okay? So go ahead and you're safe and secure. The car is stopped. So I want you to look over and there is a 4-speed, and this 4-speed is like an H, because when you actually do the clutch and the shift, reach over with your hands and take a hold of that gear shift knob and shift, when you actually do it physically, as you're thinking of doing it, what it actually does, it brings you to the moment. It brings you to that place of being mindful by just doing some simple bodily movements while you're visualizing something. So that's the concept of the gear up. And when I first started talking about just shift into neutral, my coaching client said, what do I do that? And I went through this, and so we kind of, I walked them through it, and they, one of them said, oh, I now get that. I can shift into neutral. Neutral is the center part there of the gear shift box to the right. I can just shift into neutral. Oh, I feel so calm. And it's just a simple way of using simple body movements coupled with visualizations. Because sometimes people say, oh, just think good thoughts. Well, the problem of it is that we need to retrain our brain, because we can shift negative patterns into positive habits by doing simple body movements while you're thinking in a way that you would like to think. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes a lot of sense. It really does. It's very cool. You talk in your book about forgiving, you know, how challenging it is for so many of us to forgive ourselves, and how destructive, you know, that attitude is for us. And then you have an exercise for dealing with that. So how do we do that?
One of the major parts of any mind shift exercise, I now believe, needs to start with self-forgiveness. Because regardless of where we are, I guarantee you 100% of the time, you're going to be mad at yourself. You're going to think it's your fault. It's your problem. It's all about things that you have done wrong. We get into that right and wrong place. And by going to that part of self-forgiveness, it's a profound way to start a mind shift exercise. And I had no idea how significant that was until I shared my signature mind shift exercise called Isn't That Interesting? And I shared it originally on a complimentary webinar probably in 2014, probably a year after the stroke. And I wanted to get this out to people. And I did a 45-minute webinar, anybody wants to see it, they can go ahead and, you know, say, I want to see that webinar, and opt into my list, and I would send it to them. And I had started out by adding that self-forgiveness. And after I shared that, I got an email from a man that I did not know. He was on my list, but I did not know him personally. And the email said, and you know how when you see things in print, they just sometimes words are there and they just don't mean as much as you hear them. You know what I'm talking about?
Sure. Yeah.
And I saw this email came through and said, you saved my life. And I thought, wow, well, tell me more. And I sent the email back, and the email that came back was, it was absolutely the point where I realized that I am exactly doing what I'm supposed to do, the gift that I have been given to share. And this man said that he had actually had, he was at a place in his life that everything was, he thought it was just no reason to be there, and he had a gun. And he had one bullet, and he was ready to use it, and he put it on his coffee table. He opened up his computer because he wanted to send a goodbye to his family in an email, and he happened on to the replay. And I've oftentimes thought I've got to go back and look at that subject line, because if it was a subject line that actually got him to open it, I have to find that and use that more often. And he said when he was listening to it, the first thing I said was, you know, first of all, bring up a situation that's really, you know, on the scale of discomfort. It's going to be a discomfort level on a 10, like a pain, something that's close to that. And now forgive yourself for where you are. Forgive yourself for what you've been doing. Forgive yourself. And he said, when I said that, and before I did, I said, when you hear this, I want you to know that whether you're hearing me live or you're hearing this recording or you hear me on Facebook Live, I want you to know that I am speaking directly with you. And when I said that and I said, forgive yourself, he said he fell down on his knees and he started crying. And he cried and he cried and he cried. And I want you to know that he was one of the final editors of the book.
That is so terrific. Don't you just love when the universe works through you that way? I mean, it's like you're an angel at that moment. And we have no idea when that's going to happen. That's amazing. What an amazing story. I love hearing that. What a difference that made. Yeah. You talk in your book about energetic radar. What is that?
Have you ever gone into a party and you felt like that there was so much noise and so many people around? Did you ever feel like that even though they weren't touching you, that you were this party just intruded upon you? Did you feel ever confined? Did you feel like that?
Every single time. I'm empathic. Yes.
Well, you know, and we have an energy field around us, and it collects energy all around us from other people. You know, when there's this person that comes in and they're really dark and they have this dark cloud over them and they come
yes.
near you and you feel it and you go, oh, just stay away from them. So what we need to do is we need to activate. I call it activating your energetic radar. And like I said, I'm so grateful to my coaching clients over the years because they said, you've got to put this down in a book, because I'd say, just activate your energetic radar. And they would say, by the way, this was when I was working with predominantly poker players, and they're very left brain and they're very analytical when it comes to numbers. And when I'd say, just engage your energetic radar, they'd say, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Would you please tell me what you're talking about? And so I had to figure out how to describe it. And I said, okay, you know, we do have the ability to be aware when we are around negativity. We have the ability to notice it. So if we can become consciously aware of it, we can pivot. We can shift away from it. We can protect ourselves. We can change the words we're saying. We can physically move our body away from an area that's causing us strife. And when I was talking about this, everybody would go, well, how can I protect myself? And that's when I created the egg. And this energy field that we have around us, if you put your hand on your arm, that's your hand touching a bare arm, people think that their body stops at our skin, but it doesn't. We have energy that goes out past our body. And if you get really quiet and raise your hand up and kind of, I call it like petting a sweet dog. Think about petting your energy field. You can kind of gently touch it and you can actually feel it. And the concept was introduced to me, oh gosh, it had to be in the 70s, of the fact that we can protect ourselves by putting on a mirrored egg. And I thought about that and I thought, okay, I want the egg, however, rather than being breakable, I want it to be flexible and protective, but it needs to be mirrored so that it's mirrored outward. So around our energy field, I want you right now to put on a mirrored egg. And it's the shape of you, and it goes out around the field. It's reflective outward, and it is selectively reflective. It selectively reflects only negative energy that comes towards you, but rather than reflect it back to where it started and who sent it, you don't want to create that, because if you do, you're creating bad karma. So just reflect it back out to the universe so that that energy, that negative energy, becomes completely neutralized and can be recycled. And I started doing this in the 70s because the concept was introduced to me, because I couldn't go into a shopping mall in those days. I would get sick. I would go into the shopping mall and I would get sick at my stomach, or I'd get a headache. Headaches were just awful. And mind you, I've got a body that's 6 feet 5 inches tall. I'm a big woman, and I have a lot of surface area on my energy field, and it was absorbing all this negativity. And when it was suggested that I do this, I started playing with the concept, and it was astonishing to be able to now have this mirrored egg on and be able to walk into any place and be completely protected. And it, remember, the mirrored egg selectively reflects negativity away from you, but allows any of the positivity to come through and to you. And it is so comforting, because when I'm in a hospital with my husband, you know, we may take him to the ER, and I always get up, by the way, about once every hour when I'm in the hospital with him, and I go for a walk. And people would go, "Why are you so happy? You're here in the ER." And I'm going, "Well, you know, you have to find a good in wherever you are." And I found it's a wonderful way to be sure the egg was installed. And by the way, it's now that anyone in the scope of hearing this today, I want to let you know that you now have an egg installed, but it does require maintenance, kind of like your vehicle, kind of like your car, your truck, your Mercedes, your Honda. Because you need to check in with that egg at least once a day, just for a few moments. It can take 30 seconds to do it and say, kind of close your eyes and look around and say, "Do I have any cracks in my egg?" Just breathe and just see them smoothed over. When I first started it, it was doing the concept. I'm going, this visualization, I said, this is for the birds. This is just not working. And I'm going, I couldn't figure out how I could just vision the cracked egg sealed. And so I thought, I know what duct tape is, the shiny duct tape. So in my mind's eye, I said, okay, I'm going to step out on my egg right now, go around, and I'm going to put some shiny duct tape on the outside where it's cracked. And I kind of started chuckling, and I kind of stepped back into my egg. And I went, okay, it's protected. And then it's kind of, now I've developed kind of that Yoda thing of just kind of moving your hand and it's smoothed over. But you know, it takes practice. Visualization is a practice process, but I want always to add some small physical movements, because when you do that, you engage the physicality. The more you engage different physical parts, if it's a tone, if you're, you know, moving this way, if you're moving your arm, moving your foot, what you're doing is you're asking different parts of your brain to work. And when it's doing that, when you're actually doing something, you're completely away from feeling bad, because you've shifted away from that, because you've put yourself to a task to do that. By adding the physicality to the visualization is profound.
Have you always been so, had such a great imagination? You know, we have that as children. But your imagination is wild, you know. You just come up with these things nobody else would. How did you manage to keep such a great imagination?
And you and I have never talked about this. This is not in the book. when I was 6 years old, I had tuberculosis, lived in the mountains of Virginia in the coal mining camps. It was 1955, so you can do the math as far as my age is concerned. And today I'm 70, and so this was 64 years ago. And by the way, just to let you have a chuckle with this, anyone who has had tuberculosis is likely to have stunted growth. And I am 65 inches tall. So I guess even then, I intended to disprove medical theories.
I guess that. Wow, sure.
So anyway, I had tuberculosis when I was six, and they went in to do a biopsy, and they opened me up, and they found a tremendous amount of infection around my heart. So they took out the lower left lobe, and my heart stopped. And when your heart stops for more than 4 minutes, you will, they say, they use the will word, you will have brain damage. Well, my heart was stopped for 6 minutes, and I was in the light. I know that people call it near-death experience, but Randy, this was nothing near. I was there. And to let you know, it is a place of joy and peace. And in that moment, I was no longer six. I was completely aware. And there wasn't an entity. It was just light. It was just this immense feeling of joy. And oddly enough, it was almost like some energy force turned me around and pushed me back in the direction. And the first memory that I have from that awareness, because it was like I was connected or plugged into the great universal library in the sky. I have no idea how this happened. But then the next vision that I had was looking down at that entity, that shell that was on the operating table, and everyone is scurrying around, and I'm looking down, and I'm going, no, just let it go. And I got this, there was no voice, but it was almost like there was a little bit of boot. My butt kind of pushed
kicking
me
the
back.
Butt.
Yeah, kicking the butt. And when I woke up, the doctors and the nurses were concerned that I would be brain damaged, and I knew that, and I was concerned. I was afraid to share with them where I had been and what I thought, because at that moment I was no longer six, and so I chose to speak nothing for 2 weeks, and they were convinced, though, that she's brain damaged, she's not talking. And the 2 weeks later, I just thought, well.
Why did you make that choice, real quick? Why did you make that choice?
I have no idea. Well, no, I do. I chose to do that because in those days, if I had started talking and told them where I had been, mm-hmm. I would have been put in a mental hospital in those days.
Yeah, I agree. No doubt.
Yeah, and I, you know, I didn't want that. And so when I started speaking, I was just, you know, just talk about, you know, stuff, not where I had been. And I just said, you know, the first words I said were, what's for dinner?
Did you? No, you didn't. You're hilarious.
And I was in quarantine for a year.
You were. Oh,
I guess
gosh.
You said, yeah, you asked me about my imagination because I was in quarantine for a year. And so I had fun. I started drawing, and my father had been an artist, and he had gotten one of these, you know, art institute packages where he had a drafting board, T-square and triangle, and the books on how to start to draw. And so mother, that lived under the bed, and mother would pull that out, and I would just have a ball. I started drawing and playing, and so I guess I was, you asked me where the creativity visualization came from. I guess that's where it started. But I never said anything about that until my experience until I was 16. But by the time I was 16, let's face it, your hormones have taken off. And what is a blessing about my stroke is that, and it just occurred to me a few years ago, is that I had, rather than share what I'd experienced and this awareness, that awareness was almost turned off for many years while I was experiencing life. And I realized in retrospect that that's what I was supposed to do, because I needed to experience life on multiple levels. And let me tell you, Randy, I am aces at screwing up. And when somebody comes to me and say, "Oh my goodness, oh, you won't believe what's going on," and they start telling me, and I say, "Well, been there, done that."
Right.
So what do you want to do about it? Do you choose to stay there, or do you wish to shift to a different mindset? Do you wish to have a better life? Do you wish to find out what your core values are and to be able to do a mega mind shift? And you can do that in short periods of time. It doesn't require that we take an hour to meditate every day. I mean, that would be a lovely thing, although I get really bored doing standard meditation, I want to tell you. So that's why I created mind shift exercises. They can be done in minutes. And if you set a clock and plan an alarm 10 minutes a day, put it at a certain time when you give that time to yourself, me time, call it me time, you deserve me time, and take that time to practice a mind shift exercise. What happens if you do that repeatedly for 40 days? You have begun to create the habit of mind shifting in the moment, in the instant, without wallowing in the fear, wallowing in the self-pity, wallowing in the things that are self-sabotaging.
So, wow, we got into some really heavy stuff. I'm really happy because I love metaphysics, love it. but we are out of time, so I just want to say, so your book is called Mind Shift on Demand, and Donna, tell me where we can purchase this and how you can be contacted about your website, about your workshops and things that you do.
The best thing to do is to opt in at the book site, which is mindshiftondemand.com. It's a simple site. I said, I am fed up with people having all these complex websites. Mine's really simple. It's like a 5-page site. Just front page, you can opt in for a 4-minute audio of my signature mind shift exercise. Isn't that interesting? And you'll be on my list. And I'm going to start communicating with my list, because I've actually been on sabbatical for the past 3 years taking care of family. My mother is 93. My husband is 74. He's 100% service-connected disabled combat veteran. So I've been dealing with that and dealing with self-care. And so I'm going to reactivate my contacts through my list. So that's the best way to get me is mindshiftondemand.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for this wonderful, wonderful show, and for revealing, you know, that last bit of information, which is just profound. It's just stirring. I love it. But I'm so happy to have had you as my guest, Donna. Thank you.
Randy, I'm blessed. Thank you.
So I wish you a very good day. Take care. We are out of time. If you'd like to contact me, you can contact me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. My website is randyfine.com. So it's real easy. loveyourlife@randyfine.com and randyfine.com. R-A-N-D-I always ends with an I. It's been wonderful having all of you with me today. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.